This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was mayoral candidate Lori Lightfoot, former head of the police board, the 9/11 center, and the city's procurement department. Lori started her program by saying this is day 166 of her campaign, and she's only running for one job, mayor of the city of Chicago. She quickly addressed a rumor that she has been approached by Tony Preckwinkle and offered a job in her administration if Lightfoot would withdraw. She said, "No way." Lightfoot said 23,000 people have been shot in Chicago since Rahm Emanuel took office in 2011. Obviously, a major part of her campaign will be the issue of public safety. She talked about the increased costs of policing. She talked about the increased emergency room visits by people who are shot and even killed. Dreams that will never be made real. She said, in many communities in Chicago, there is fear among kids and adults, and that is the norm. She talked about the fact that Chicago is losing people, and people need a reason to hope and stay in the city of Chicago. Therefore, we need good-paying jobs, she said, affordable housing, improved schools, and restoring confidence in city and state government. As mayor, she said she'll work with the business community. She'll work to strengthen neighborhoods. She'll work to keep the downtown and North Michigan Avenue areas vibrant and thriving, but also we must restore our neighborhoods. She said city government must be run more efficiently. Taxpayers, she said, will not be treated as an ATM machine without limits when she is elected mayor of the city of Chicago. She says as mayor of the city of Chicago, she will set up the first office for public safety. Now there are only two people in the city of Chicago who are involved in the office of public safety. She wants to know, where are the police cameras? Several months ago on a weekend in Chicago, she said, 70 people were shot, 12 were killed, only one person has been arrested. Where are all the cameras that should be helping to protect our city? As mayor, she said she'll work to get more capital to small businesses. She'll reform the TIF situation so that investment will come where it is truly needed. With the issue of a school board, she said she's all for an elected school board. Her mom, she said, was an elected member of a school board, and she says there's an incredible value of parent advocacy in public policy decisions. She said we have to end all privilege and prerogatives among aldermen regarding housing and zoning. We must listen to and engage those who are most affected by public policy decisions. Finally, she said, I will be a leader willing to take on the special interests, and none of the other candidates to this point in time have made that statement.
So, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for being here. So, I am told by no less an authority than Alexa, of course, the device that runs all of our lives now, that today marks the 166th day of our campaign. I'm running for just one job, although apparently in Illinois you can run for multiple offices at the same time. The job I seek is to be the next mayor of Chicago. This journey has been made possible by the sacrifices of many, like my spouse and daughter, but also an incredible campaign team who work countless hours all in the pursuit of a better Chicago. And we are joined today by my campaign chair, Mike Bauer, and donors and supporters who help make Team Lightfoot a reality. I'm in your debt, and I thank you. I also need to give a shout-out to my former colleagues at Mayor Brown, who have been amazing support for me over many, many years of my growth as a lawyer, and I thank you all for being here as well. I wanted to share this picture of me with you. It was taken when I was about 7 or 8 years old. I'm standing in the sidewalk in front of the second house that I lived in as a child. We lost the first house when my dad lost his job. I was an infant then, and only later learned that the factory where my dad worked, trimming foam on mattresses, had left our town, and with that departure, my father lost his job. Back in the early 1960s, when my dad lost his job, In my little town, jobs were not plentiful for a deaf black man with a high school degree. So we lost that first house, and we struggled financially for the rest of my childhood. We moved to the second house where this picture was taken. It was a rental, a two-bedroom house for the six of us. And I remember that it had a coal furnace that generated our heat. I like this photo in part because of the memories that it evokes. My dad's old station wagon, where he kept the tools he used in various side jobs. Through my childhood, my dad always worked two, if not three, jobs. He had no choice. This old station wagon is one of the many used cars that my family depended on over the years. Growing up, no one I knew ever had a new car. This photo also reminds me of a street that had houses full of kids my age where we learned about life together. We played and grew up together, friendships that I am grateful for and maintain some 50-plus years later. That old house is now gone. It's just a chunk of cement and a lot of weeds that remains. That's true of most of the other houses on the street in which I grew up, which is now lined with vacant lots and old houses desperately in need of repair. My hometown struggles, and my old neighborhood, unfortunately, is a victim of that neglect. The things that endure from that time, aside from those old friendships, are the lessons my parents taught me and showed me every day. They instilled in me a clear sense of values about dedication to family and respect for friends and community and school, the importance of hard work and education. And most importantly, as a young black girl, to hold my head up high and never let anyone else dictate the course of my future. My parents grew up in a time where their race defined everything. Everything in their lives. They were born and lived in the segregated South, and individually and as a unit endured, unfortunately, a life of hardships. But like all loving parents, they still wanted more for their children and worked very hard every single day to turn those aspirations into reality for us. Daily, they instilled in me a sense that I could do anything I wanted, and not my race, my gender, nor our financial status could hold me back. I also developed a very strong sense of social justice and why equity and inclusion are so fundamentally important. And I stand on those principles today. I think of that period of my time a lot, and these very early years have come back to me many times over the course of this campaign. Before I moved here 30-plus years ago, what I knew of Chicago arose from reading Ebony and Jet magazines, flipping through the pages and seeing photos from galas and charity events. I imagined Chicago as a place of great wealth and prosperity. But as we know, the reality of Chicago is far more complex, and it's that Chicago that I want to discuss more with you today. I have a vision of Chicago where we are united in a common sense of purpose to move our city forward for a greater tomorrow. One city coming together to make our challenges, one city coming together to take on our challenges, celebrate our triumphs, and where opportunity is available to all. To realize this vision will not be easy, and we will absolutely have to face some hard truths. But if we are committed to the kind of change that we need, where we do not leave behind individuals, families, or neighborhoods, we can move forward together toward a more prosperous tomorrow. We have to begin by examining our priorities and specifically how and where we invest. In the last 7 years, we have bet big on downtown investments, the Loop, River North, South and West Loop, and that investment shows. We have a beautiful, gleaming city, particularly in our downtown, that is the envy of other cities across the country. We continue to set records for the number of tourists who come to our city and spend their money in our hotels and restaurants and other attractions. We provide significant incentives to attract and retain businesses in the downtown. And that all seems great. And it is great for some. not enough people are benefiting from that prosperity. And indeed, every single day, individuals, families, and neighborhoods are suffering. The news from other parts of the city is different and far more dire. And now I fear that we are at a crisis point. And two words underscore that narrative, and that is fear and flight. And how does this manifest itself? I want you to think about this number, and it is 23,000. That's the number of people who have been shot in this city since Rahm Emanuel took the oath of office in May of 2011. 23,000 is not some benign statistic. This shockingly large number of 23,000 also comes with significant costs to every single taxpayer in Chicago. This type of devastation comes with a price tag for costs related to the criminal justice system, increased policing, emergency room and other medical expenses, and the lack of opportunity cost from lives left unfulfilled, just to name a few. It represents death. Lives shattered, neighborhoods gutted, and dreams that will never be made real. It means lifelong trauma that spreads through our communities like a terrible virus. It means that young children grow up with fear as their norm. It wakes them up in the morning, puts them to bed at night, and is their constant companion during the day. And this fear has now spread. It is no longer contained in certain neighborhoods south of Roosevelt Road or west of Ashland. I hear from people all over the city that the violence, the reality, and the threat of it has now overtaken discussions in homes, coffee shops, community gatherings, in Northside enclaves. This fear also manifests itself in conversations about whether Chicago is a place where people can continue to live and thrive. People are asking if they can have a real future here. I have had countless conversations in these 5 months of campaigning among people from all walks of life. Young people, seniors, the wealthy and the working class, all who have serious doubts about whether or not Chicago can remain their home. We have to give people a reason to hope and a reason to stay. To keep making Chicago a safe and welcoming place for families and individuals and where businesses can continue to grow and thrive, we have to do more to provide incentives. We have to provide incentives for businesses to use their resources and philanthropy to invest in city government that is transparent and inclusive and ready to take on the necessary challenges. We must address the violence, the absence of safe and high-quality open enrollment elementary and high schools in every neighborhood. We must address the regressive taxes that squeeze low-income and middle-income families and individuals, the absence of good jobs that pay a living wage so that people can take care of themselves and their families and have the luxury to dream of a comfortable life. And we have to take on the challenge of providing affordable housing options for individuals and families. And we must address the loss of confidence that people have in government, whether it's city, county, state. And people have to believe that the government will actually be responsive to their needs. If we address these and other challenges, we can stem the tide of people leaving our city by the thousands every year. Chicago remains one of the only metropolitan areas in the country that is losing population. And this fact has to be treated as a matter of urgency in city government. These losses have consequences. For example, in the last 8 years, we have lost 40,000 school-age children in the city. This decline is potentially catastrophic to CPS, whose funding stream is dependent on student headcount. The simple math is that we are losing African Americans on the South and the West Side, which is destabilizing those neighborhoods. And if not turned around, will no doubt lead to additional painful discussions about school closures. This hollowing out of our neighborhoods makes the situation for those that remain all the more desperate. And the loss of population is also affecting our middle-class families who are moving out of the city and the state. The loss of population means a loss of critically needed tax base at a time when we can least afford it. And there are other consequences, but I think you understand the point that I am emphasizing. So what can we do to address this array of challenges? Can they actually be solved? And if so, at what cost? As mayor, I will continue to work with all Chicagoans to address these urgent needs. I will work with the business community and ensure that we are doing everything that we can to keep our economy vibrant and to truly spread that prosperity to other areas outside of the downtown. I know firsthand how to work with business leaders. As a senior equity partner in one of the largest law firms in the world, I have spent considerable time in boardrooms with CEOs and other executives who have sought my counsel to help them solve problems, eliminate risk, and move their businesses forward. I will utilize that experience every day as mayor, and I will assemble a team who understands the importance of engaging the business community to help all Chicago move forward. A priority of that work must include addressing the deteriorating conditions and the quality of life in way too many neighborhoods in our city. We have both a moral and fiscal imperative to do this work. And developing and executing a comprehensive plan for strengthening our neighborhoods does not mean that we retreat from continuing to ensure that our downtown areas continue to thrive. It is a false choice, as I have heard people argue, that we cannot do one without the other, that business development that we have seen will be halted if we turn our attention in any measure to what is happening elsewhere in our city. That is wrong. Will taking care of the needs of our neighborhoods mean that we have to reconfigure some priorities? Of course. But providing investment in resource-starved neighborhoods can be done without sacrificing the steady and strong vibrancy of our downtown areas. And doing so will ultimately strengthen, not diminish, our overall economy. We can and we must do both simultaneously. The future of our city depends on it. And I know this to be true as someone who helped create small business opportunities when I helped run the city's procurement department with Mary Dempsey and our team. I know it also from the perspective of someone who has spent decades as a lawyer advising Fortune 100 companies doing business all over the world, and as a person who has helped small and middle market businesses in this city thrive. A multi-track investment strategy must also mean that we run city government far more efficiently than we are currently doing. I will not treat taxpayers as an ATM machine with no limit. Can you clap for that? We have to do better to deliver vital services in our city more efficiently and provide maximum impact for every investment decision. Here are a few of the ideas that we must consider if we are truly going to uplift the quality of life in neighborhoods and provide beacons of hope for our children. Public safety. Of course, the first priority has to be stemming the flow of violence. We must treat this continuing explosion of violence as the public health crisis that it is. Viewing this crisis through the public health lens will compel us to look at the root causes of crime and work to address the problems at the source. Our current strategy of law enforcement first and almost only is ineffective and will never bring the kind of long-term sustainable progress that we need. In my travels, I hear people from all over the city say simply that they do not feel safe. We have to change that perception and provide the reality of public safety for everyone in every neighborhood. I released a detailed plan for public safety that is available on our website, but the highlights of that plan are these. I will create the first of its kind Mayor's Office for Public Safety. Right now, in Chicago, we have two full-time personnel responsible for managing the full array of public safety needs in this city. Compare that with New York, that has about 50 full-time personnel, and LA that has about 30. We need to harness all the tools of city government to meet the needs of victims, witnesses, police, and other first responders, and be much more strategic in planning and accountability. It is impossible to do that job with only two people at the helm. Two people to handle public safety, frankly, shows a lack of seriousness to tackle this problem, and that will change when I am mayor. We have to invest in communities through economic opportunity. We have to have quality neighborhood schools and the expansion of violence interruption strategies, programs to fight recidivism, and to help ex-offenders re-enter society. And we need to institute an anti-violence curriculum in CPS. We need a proactive strategy to stop the significant flow of illegal guns into our city from Indiana, from Wisconsin, and from southern states like Mississippi. This means we must engage in a more focused coordination with the federal government to target gun traffickers, felons in possession, and straw purchasers. We have to work with state government to strengthen gun laws, including legislation to regulate gun dealers. If the federal government is not going to do its job, we have to do it here at the state level. We have to create within the Chicago Police Department a unit that has 360-degree review of data on illegal guns, trafficking, investigation, and deployment of resources instead of the siloed approach that we have now. And we must do a better job of strategically deploying police cameras. And let me pause on this last point for a moment. You remember that weekend back in July when over 70 people were shot and 12 were killed? To date, we have one arrest stemming from that carnage that happened outside on our streets. I've been asking since the moment I heard these figures, where in the hell were the cameras? If we do a better job of using technology, we are going to make our city safer, and we have to do that. As I have noted, we have to bring focus and attention to economic development in our neighborhoods. And here are a few pillars of my approach. The first is focusing on building up small business activity in our neighborhoods. We need small businesses that will hire people from neighborhoods and help build wealth and capacity in neighborhoods. The same energy that we have exerted to lure the likes of Amazon and Google and McDonald's and all these other big companies, we need to have that same focus and energy to create small business incubators and other growth for small businesses in our neighborhoods. I know from working with small businesses for years that one of the biggest challenges that they face is access to capital. This is where a mayor and her team can make the case to banks and other lenders to lower the barriers for accessing capital so that entrepreneurs with a solid business plan have an opportunity to thrive in our city. And when we talk about small businesses, we need to make sure that women and minorities are part of this discussion. This is not just the responsibility of government, but for companies that do business with the city as well. It is important that our values are aligned and that supply chain diversity matters. We need a commitment that in every city contract for goods and services, we are thoughtful about building wealth for city residents and businesses, and that has to include women and minority-owned businesses. We need to scale up micro-lending strategies that have been successful here and abroad, and we need to incentivize other businesses to partner with the city to invest in neighborhoods who need resources and community anchors. You know this. Many areas of the city have every kind of desert that you can imagine: food, healthcare, pharmacy, and the list goes on. And the only way we can eliminate these deserts is if the businesses who can literally make the difference between life and death come into our neighborhoods and partner with us. And as a mayor, I will make sure that that happens. I will use every lever and tool and persuasion and more where necessary to make sure that we are bringing businesses to the south and the west sides and other areas of the city that desperately need it. Many of you in this audience work for companies that make philanthropic investments already, and many of you as individuals make similar kinds of investments in the causes that you support. People ask me all the time, what can I do to help? And I think that question underscores how engaged people all over the city are and want to do their part to meet unmet needs. As mayor, I will articulate a vision of investment that offers an array of options for that kind of charitable giving as well. And of course, we need to reform the way we utilize TIFs. I could go on all day about that, but fundamentally, we got to get back to basics. We got to make sure that we're using TIF dollars to truly invest in neighborhoods that are desperate for economic resources. And another potentially significant tool that is just coming into focus are the new opportunity zones. One of the few real benefits to low and moderate income people from the new tax law, people with capital gains income have an opportunity to make investments through qualified opportunity funds. The opportunity zones in the city number 130, and they are located in low income, high unemployment areas on the south and the west sides. We have an opportunity to use this tool to really uplift the quality of life in these neighborhoods, and this is something we're going to be focused on. And of course, economic development must also include a ready, willing, and able workforce. We have to think about this from the perspective of engaging our young people and their future as workers and adults who need a connection to the legitimate economy. We need more investments in technology and the trades in our schools to make sure that our children are really prepared for 21st century jobs. And we need neighborhood job training resources that include wraparound services so that adults who do not have a history of work get the support and resources they need to have a realistic path to a job that pays a living wage. We cannot continue to have, as we do now, the illegal drug trade be the largest employer in neighborhood after neighborhood in our city. And, of course, we need to continue making progress in public education, from pre-K through college. One of my priorities is making sure that we have real, safe choices in every neighborhood. It pains me that so many CPS students are leaving their neighborhoods every day in pursuit of a decent education. It is a reality that young families often feel that they have no options in the city, and so they choose to leave and go to the suburbs. We need to reprioritize the importance of neighborhood schools. They are more than just places of learning. They can and they should be community assets. We also need to expand our notions of learning outside of the regular school day so that we have opportunities for young people to feed their desire for learning outside of the school day. To aid in this task, I support an elected school board in which engaged parents and other stakeholders have a real voice. My mother served on an elected school board for years, and I know the value of parent advocacy and key policymaking discussions. Now, there are another of other topics that I would love to cover, but time does not permit. But I'm going to just touch on one other that I think is important. Everywhere that I have gone throughout the course of this campaign, the issue of affordable housing has come up. People talk about it from different perspectives, whether given the fears, the realities of gentrification, squeezing out longtime homeowners or renters who can now not afford to live in their neighborhoods, or seniors who want to maintain their social networks in their neighborhoods that afford them a good quality of life, or dealing with our burgeoning homeless problem. This is an issue that the city has to lead on. And we will be rolling out our full housing policy plan soon, but let me highlight one important point. I pledge to support and sign into law the Affordable Housing Ordinance. This ordinance provides that if development with affordable units is proposed in a ward where less than 10% of the rental housing stock is affordable, then the proposed development would automatically go through a streamlined process for approval. What this means, folks, is we are getting rid of aldermanic privilege and prerogative that stops us from funding and supporting affordable housing. We have to lead on this issue, not follow, not leave it up to the vagaries of developers. The city has a role to play in breaking down segregation, bringing real opportunity for individuals and families, and affordable housing is critically important to that mission. Now, what do all of these policy prescriptions have in common? They are designed to address the real needs of people in the city. They are designed to stem the fear and the flight that is decimating our city and undermining our future. They are born from listening and engaging with the very people whose lives are most affected and from subject matter experts. This is the way that good government policy should be created, and it is a template for what we can do together to address the needs in our city. This city has given me incredible opportunities, and I want to give it back with a vision that no matter who you are, no matter where you live, the God you worship, the person you love, we are all going to be united on a mission to create meaningful opportunity for all. I have had this incredible privilege to bear witness to this magnificent spirit of people throughout this city. By virtue of my status as a candidate, people have been unbelievably generous in sharing their stories, their aspirations and frustrations, their successes and the challenges that they face every single day. My life has been forever changed by what I have seen, what I have heard, and what I have felt. I have seen myself in people, the family and friends then and now who struggle, but also who have hopes and dreams for a better tomorrow. Coming where I come from, it is impossible to ignore this yearning and this need for change. If you remember nothing more today, please take this with you. We must not look away from when our neighbor is suffering. We must not ignore or avert our eyes to the great need that surrounds us. We must have an educated consciousness and act in big ways or small, but we must act. Our silence is a ratification of the status quo, which has and will continue to fail us, all of us. There is and will continue to be a direct and calculable cost for our neglect. Despite these challenges, we have the tools at our fingertips to do better. In this great city, where we have world-class talent all around us, we can do better. What we have been lacking is a leader who is willing to take on the special interests and carve a new progressive path forward for the city. What we have been missing is a leader who is not beholden to special interests, who is independent, experienced, and a fierce proponent for change. And folks, I am that leader. My name is Lori Lightfoot. And with your help and the support of people across this city who desperately want change, who want a government that puts people first, I will be the next mayor of this city. Thank you.
Get your water?
Yep.
Warmer? Okay. You guys, we have a ton of questions. I'm going to get right to it because we're not going to get to all of them. Go on, Miles. What you doing?
I'm unfurling for you.
Oh. Well, you're unfurling. Okay. So you're going to have to speed round these,
right.
Okay? This is a hugely important question, and we have six of them, and they're all the same. Basically, it says, can you speak to the rumor that you are possibly stepping down and make a deal for one of the other candidates? Just, I mean, it's like six questions.
I'm glad I got that question. Let me just say up front, that's completely false.
So, oh, I'm sorry. They didn't hear me?
So the question was, there's a rumor floating around that I'm going to step down and take a deal, and I'll name it, as some person in a Tony Preckwinkle administration. Let me be clear. That's never happening. It was false. It was false the minute it was said. And what it shows, frankly, is the kind of machine-style bullying that it has no place in the future of this city.
You guys, these are really great questions, but yeah, I'm just not going to get to all of them. But there are some really, really good ones, so I'm going to hit those. You have several former or current city employees in the room. What do you do? What are your plans to protect the pensions?
Well, look, there's no magic solution to the pensions. You all know that. We and lots of people across the state have done everything that they can to try to address this question. One thing that I can say is this. Having grown up in a town where steel mills went bankrupt and a lot of men in my town lost their pensions, I can assure you that I'm never going to do anything that impairs the pensions of people who base their whole retirement plan around the promise and the commitment that the city has made to them. That means we're going to have some hard choices, but I can assure you I'm not going to do anything to impair the retirement benefits of people who have already retired and moved on to the next chapter of their life.
This question is coming from Karen Riley, but Hermione Hartman asks something very similar. What plan do you have to ensure our cultural institutions, hospitals, and private universities that receive tax incentive and other resources to do business with the black companies and to include them in leadership, money managers, and other professionals? Karen, are you in the room still? Oh, there you are. I knew I saw you earlier. I was like, is she still here? And Hermine asked something very similar, so I'm trying to compact everything here.
So, you know, as I said in my remarks, we have to be a city that actually speaks our values, and we can't just have something written down on a paper. One of the clearest ways in which we speak our values is how we build wealth for small businesses, women, and people of color. I can assure you, as somebody who has spent a lot of time thinking about and managing procurement processes, I will make sure that we do speak our values and that we really focus on not just in construction jobs, but in professional services as well, and that the people who do business with the city of Chicago will have those same set of values.
Andrew Bray, are you still in the room? Oh, there you are. I like you guys are up front. Illinois Network of Charter Schools, can you give us your top three educational priorities for CPS? I know you touched on it, but can you say what they are, 1, 2, 3?
Neighborhood schools, managing the contracts that we have so that we don't give out hundreds of millions of dollars to vendors who leave our schools filthy and rat-infested. That's a concept. And making sure that our schools are actually safe for our kids. Those are the top priorities.
Ann Corder? Okay, did I say your name right? Good for me. How will you as mayor protect children and families from the harm caused by lead poisoning in our water service lines and our old housing stock? Will you continue early childhood expansion of Chicago preschool quality care child care?
I think there's a movement afoot at the city council level to address that specific issue regarding lead in the water. Unfortunately, all this construction that we did to replace the water service lines, we didn't give people an opportunity to also replace the lines that go into their homes. It's late, but we have to have that conversation. We have to make sure that we're doing the best that we can. We need to make sure, obviously, that whether it's a CPS in our hospitals and our parks, that those water supplies are not lead-laden. Obviously, the lead mostly affects children at their infancy, but the biggest other issue, which continues to still be a problem, is lead paint, and that has a long-term effect on our young people, so we've got to do a better job on that front as well.
You guys, the questions on gun violence and police boards, she kind of touched on those during her speech, so I'm going to gloss over those as well. Chris Benning from Mayor Brown?
Mm-hmm. Over there.
Partner? Buddy, friend, okay. What do you see as a priorities, as your priorities for the city's infrastructure investments? Good question.
Well, I think one of the things we have to do is make sure that we're keeping our transportation running well. We also have, unfortunately, still a number of streets that are in horrible disrepair that is causing a problem. And this is not quite infrastructure, but we've got to better manage our traffic flow. I mean, Chicago is becoming like L.A. It's impossible to get around any time of the day, and that obviously has a cost on our infrastructure as well. But those are some of the things that we're focused on.
Steven Scarden. I hear Dr. Green speaking from on high. He is saying legibility is, like, really important. He talks to me sometimes. He says stuff, you guys. Sorry, Stephen. How would you change, if at all, some of the city's economic develop programs, such as the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund? You touched on it a little bit, but can you expand?
Yeah, we have to make sure that we're actually using the money that's collected to help distressed neighborhoods. We're using TIF dollars and other resources that have been accumulated to fill budget shortfalls. We're using it to lure businesses downtown that really, frankly, don't need our help. So we've got to actually get back to basics and doing investments and make sure that we're using the dollars that are available to us to help blighted areas in our city. It's pretty simple, actually.
Okay. Lindsay Laporal. Okay, I shot that. Neighbors for Affordable Housing on the Northwest Side. Thank you for the strong stand and the ARO. Can you tell us more about specific affordable housing proposals? You talked about it, but can you expand a little?
Yeah, this is an issue that is challenging us. As I mentioned, everywhere I have gone in the last 5 months, this issue has come up. Again, I'm not going to preview too much of it, but we are going to be rolling out relatively soon a comprehensive plan for affordable housing, and we have reached out to virtually every stakeholder that we can to make sure that we're getting this right. But the city has to have a plan and a vision and not just leave affordable housing, meaning housing that's affordable to individuals and families in particular. We can't just leave that to the vagaries of the development process. The city's got to lead. So look more for our housing policy plan.
Let me know about that one. So Hallie Barker from the Medill School of Journalism, are you here? No? Because if you leave sometime, I don't get to ask your question, just because. Please give my regards to Dr. Whitaker. If elected, do you intend to combat the pressing issue of gun violence in the city? You talked about all the guns coming from outside, but let's talk about in the city. And whose cooperation do you need to execute your plan? I think that's an important part of the question.
We need everybody. The biggest problem that we have in the city, obviously, is we have way too many illegal guns on the street. They're pouring over the border from Indiana, from Wisconsin, from the southern states. We have a reactive strategy. We have to have a proactive strategy. To make that happen, it can't just rely upon CPD, who's doing difficult work, but we've got to have our federal partners step up. I've articulated very specific plans for that and our public safety plan, but we've got to have a focus at the federal level, not only here, but in Indiana and all the way down to Mississippi, so that we are stopping the guns from getting on our streets and not waiting until after they get here to try to do something about gun violence.
Okay.
Oh, all right, I'm happy to talk about it.
Okay.
This question is, why haven't I said anything about the consent decree? I think I've talked ad nauseum about the consent decree in any forum. I'll just say this. Again, go to our website. We issued a six-page, single-space evaluation of the consent decree. And I will also say Jeff Sessions is wrong, and we will fight him. We need to reform our police department.
Did she say six-page, single-spaced?
I'm a lawyer. What do you expect?
I know. And we appreciate the services of Mayor Brown. So I think we've heard a lot. I think we could all talk to Lori all afternoon. I'd say grab her if you can. I don't know if she's got press or whatever afterwards. But, Lori, we appreciate you so much.